the first part of this chapter, Arjuna has expressed his doubts about fighting. And then he has surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna immediately began instructing him. First instruction was that he should understand that intelligent people do not speak the way Arjuna is speaking. Pragyavara Mishtrabhasha say, Gatasun Agatasun Stan Nanu Sochanti Pandita. Because the root illusion that Arjuna's arguments were based on was that he was considering everything from the point of view of him being his body and the opposing soldiers being their bodies. And just as if when we are calculating, and the first calculation is 1 and 1 equals 3, then every other calculation or the answer will always be wrong because that initial calculation is wrong. So Arjuna was thinking of himself as the center of his decision making and as his body, practically speaking. And therefore Krishna began to instruct him on jnana, which is realized basically through an inactive path. And this jnana lets us know that the body is eternal. Is that right? Oh, that's right. It's the soul that's eternal. That the soul is eternal and it cannot die. And the body is temporary and it cannot be saved. Everything that is eternal will always be eternal. So therefore, why are you grieving? Based on this jnana, that we are not our bodies, that we are souls, why are you grieving for something that is eternal? How could something that is eternal be hurt in any way? So you're an illusion. Your body is trembling, your bow is slipping from your hand, you are sitting down on the chariot, because you don't want to kill something that's eternal. But Arjuna, you should understand that something that is eternal cannot be killed. And the people that you are seeing here on the battlefield, they're eternal. They're not their bodies. And from the other side, this is all jnana. From the other side, Arjuna, you should understand that that body that you're so attached to, no matter how attached you are to that body, no matter how much you avoid fighting in this battlefield, you will not be able to save the bodies of your loved ones. The body is doomed. So from the point of view of the soul, you should fight. And from the point of view of the body, you should fight, you should do your duty. That is jnana, that is the second part, which ends approximately on text 29 or 30. Then, after explaining this jnana, Krishna begins to explain the Vedic system of prescribed duties of karma kanda. That ends at the previous verse 37, I think. And in that karma kanda section, or karma section, Krishna explains, yes, Arjuna, you should fight, not because you're a soul, but because you're going to get something great if you fight. You cannot lose, he tells Arjuna. If you do your duty, prescribe duties according to Shastra, you cannot lose. Because if you win, you will gain the kingdom and you will rule. And if you lose, and if your body is killed, then you will go to Swarga, heaven. So either way, you cannot lose. And if you don't fight, you will neither get heaven in your next life, nor will you get the kingdom in this life. You will save yourself from dying on the battlefield, but what will happen to you is worse than being pierced by 1,000 arrows of your enemy. You will become infamous and thought of as a coward. And for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Therefore, fighting will bring you all gain. You cannot lose by fighting, and by running from the battlefield, you cannot win. So this is a karma explanation by which one does what one is doing to get some result. Now, in the next section, which goes from 38 to 53, I believe, Krishna is going to explain the combination of jnana and karma. Jnana is usually inactive. And why is a jnani inactive? Because he doesn't want to do anything. He sits and he meditates because he knows that he's a soul, but he is trapped by the body. So if he does any activity in this world, it is going to bring a reaction. And he's going to get further entangled in karma. And he wants to end his life of in the material world. He wants to get out. So therefore, he doesn't do any activity. Jnana yoga, sankhya yoga. And karma is doing activity to bring good results. So when you mix karma and jnana together, when you mix the knowledge that you're a soul with activity, you get what is called nishkam karma. Although this term is not used in the Bhagavad Gita by Prabhupada in the translation, it is one used in the commentaries by both Baladev Vidyabhusan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to explain that detached state where one works but doesn't work to get anything material, but just works on one out of several levels. If one wants to perform nishkam karma, one can do it on the jnana level, just trying to merge in Brahman. He can do it just he's completely detached from the material world, or he can do it to get Brahman, or he can do it to get Paramatma realization even, or ultimately, one can do it as karma yoga to obtain Krishna, and then the highest stage of acting with detachment is doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. Not only doing what you want to do for Krishna, and what you're supposed to do for Krishna, but acting for Krishna's pleasure, and that is called bhakti yoga, acting to please Krishna. So there are different levels that this nishkam karma or detached activity can be done on. And according to the desire of one and the realization of one, when he is acting in this detached fashion, he may be detached from the results of his work, but he may be attached to either Brahman or he may be attached to Krishna. Krishna's lotus feet. Or just making progress, or the work itself. So depending upon the level of attachment, spiritual attachment, one has when he does his materially detached work, he will get one result or another. Any questions about that?
When you mix jnana and karma, then you have nishkam.
Nishkam. Kam means desire, nishkam, without any desire. Karma or work without any desire for fruit.
Which is equivalent to bhuti yoga.
Bhuti yoga. Because by the bhuti or intelligence, one is detaching himself from the material world. So therefore, that's one of the main reasons it is called bhuti yoga. By the use of fixed intelligence, one detaches himself from the material world. He knows with his intelligence that he's a soul. He knows that being attached to results in the material world will entangle him forever. So using strong intelligence, and this will be explained in the last verse of the third chapter, using strong intelligence, he cuts his attachment to the material world and fixes his consciousness either in detachment or attachment to Brahman or attachment to the lotus feet of Krishna, depending upon his spiritual realization and his association.
Is that for a sannyasa, karma, and avidya? So it's uncovered, right? Of karma and jnana. So how can you combine jnana and karma and
karma on the jnana level, action on the spiritual level? But he's talking about pure devotional service. But still, pure devotional service is on the level of jnana, but it has no desire for jnana. Anyway, that's a different type of question. Last question.
I don't understand very well this level of miscontrolling or two things in mind.
Right, but this is another way to cease activities. This will be see, they don't want to cease activities, they want to cease the reaction to activities. So this is another way to attain, this is exactly the point on 39. So I'll use that as Krishna's indication that we should move on. So Krishna says, now right after saying, Some of us become confused when Krishna says one thing and then Krishna says one thing and then in the next verse he says something different. But in text 37, Krishna says, get up and fight and attain the heavenly kingdoms or conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. And in this verse, in 38, do thou fight for the sake of fighting without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain. A different mood completely. He's brought his instruction up to a completely different level. Without considering loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by so doing, you shall never incur sin. You will get neither pious reactions or impious reactions if you fight in a detached way. And again, there are different levels of detachment that we could fight on. When we say detachment, we mean materially detached. But spiritually, we could be materially detached, but yet spiritually attached to different types, different realizations. And according to our spiritual attachment, we will get that result. So Arjuna may say that you're asking me to fight in this horrible warfare and be detached. Now usually when we're inspired to do something, we want to get something from it. A man will work very hard at his business. He'll work day and night like a donkey. Why? Because he wants to get money, or he wants to get some position, or he wants to get power. But here, Krishna is telling Arjuna to fight for the sake of fighting. Just fight because it's your duty, and don't even bother about getting happiness or distress. So it's one thing if you're in a position of a horrible war and you're going to fight and you want to gain the kingdom. But where is the motivation to fight when you're not supposed to think about gaining the kingdom? Whether you're going to win or lose. And you see there's going to be a big disaster, blood flowing everywhere. So where is the motivation to fight if one is detached? As Krishna is recommending in this 38th verse. Because Arjuna can say that, yes, you're saying that if I fight in this detached way, I shall never incur any sin. But another way I can not incur sin is not even bother fighting. That's even a better idea. That way no one will be killed, etc. So what is the motivation to fight when one isn't trying to get something? This is karma on a different platform. Work on a different platform, not on the furtive platform. And it's not inactive. It is on the gyan platform, knowing that we're a soul. But what is the motivation to fight on that level, or to do one's duty? And that is to please Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada says in the first paragraph, Lord Krishna now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting. because he desires the battle. There is no consideration of happiness or distress, profit or gain, victory or defeat in the activities of Krishna consciousness. That everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna. This transcendental consciousness. This is bhakti. Why do anything? To please Krishna. And when we put his pleasure first, we are not in material consciousness. This is bhakti. Now the next verse. Thus far, I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. That is that jnana that we had heard about earlier. Now, it's the same knowledge. The same knowledge. That is what jnana means. The same knowledge that Krishna has described in that verses 11 through 30. That one will attain through the jnana or inactive or analytical path. Now Krishna says, I will explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. How to act on the jnana platform, not how to be inactive on the jnana platform. Now, it's very important to understand this distinction about jnana, inactivity and action, and jnana on, and act karma on the jnana platform. Otherwise, you will miss one of the main themes of the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna will open with this very question about explaining this further in the first verse of the third chapter. Now listen as I explain it. The same knowledge that I have explained that you would attain through the analytical study or the path of jnana. Now listen, as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. That's nishkam karma or buddhi yoga. O son of Prita, when you act in such knowledge, that's the combination of action and spiritual realization. When you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of work. So by directing one's intelligence, one's buddhi, or intelligence towards the absolute, and freeing oneself from material attachments, we're going to end up with buddhi yoga. Now listen, Krishna says to Arjuna. In this endeavor, now listen carefully, Krishna says to Arjuna. In this endeavor, there are two qualities. If one is endeavoring on the transcendental path by this buddhi yoga, or nishkam karma yoga, or detached activity, there is no loss or diminution. There is no loss. You will only gain by taking up this path. Arjuna is afraid of so many losses if he fights in this battle. But Krishna says there is no loss or diminution if you fight in this consciousness, the consciousness of buddhi yoga. And, in addition, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Because the most dangerous type of fear is after having come to this human birth, samsara dava nalalila loke, after billions of years and millions and millions and millions of births, somehow or another, one comes to the human form of life. And one uses this human form of life for sense gratification in animalistic living. And therefore, in his next life, he is degraded to the position of an animal again. That is the most fearful thing. Out of the billions and billions and billions and billions of souls in this room, so few humans are here. What to speak of billions of souls, zillions and quadrillions of souls in this world. So few humans. What to speak of this amount of souls in the universe? How many of them have the intelligence to make use, use their intelligence, that has power of intelligence to become spiritually aware? So these two points, Krishna is telling Arjuna of the glories of Buddhi Yoga. One that can never be a loss. Whatever you gain in Krishna consciousness in this life is eternally yours. Whatever you gain materially will be taken away from you, whether it's fame or money or wealth or family or land. At the death of the body, it is finished. But what we gain spiritually, we carry with us until that spiritual gain will grow and grow and grow until we eventually attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So there is only gain on the spiritual path. And on the material path, there is only loss. And secondly, the glories of this Buddhi Yoga, that it protects one from the greatest type of fear. Because as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that that at least one is sure, if one takes up Krishna consciousness, at least one is sure to have a chance in the next life of being born again as a human being. This is the glory of the spiritual path. Those, now this next verse, 41, is a very special verse. Now the path is being glorified. The path of detached work. And ultimately, this detached work doesn't mean detached from Krishna. It means detached from matter. And ultimately, although there are, as we said, there are different levels that one could be, can perform detached work on, it ultimately means attached to the lotus feet of Krishna and acting just for Krishna's pleasure. The next verse. Vyavya satmika buddhi ekeya kurunandana bahu shaka yanantascha buddhayo vyavasahina. Those who are on this path of vyavya satmika buddhi, they are resolute in purpose. They are fixed in purpose. And their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So if one still has material attachment and is seeking to enjoy the objects of this material world, being on a path of working but without any attachment is torture in one sense. And you don't make quick advancement because you're trying to grab so many material fruits. But one whose buddhi is fixed on this path, he is resolute in purpose. He is only going in one direction. And then bahushaka. Bahushaka means many branched. And just like a tree has many branches, and if all those branches, if you can imagine taking all the branches of a tree and putting them one on top of another, so it made a straight line. How far that would go. That same tree that is like this, and 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 like this. If all the wood was going in one line, how much distance it can cover. So similarly, when our intelligence is not fixed in Krishna, but is attached to the objects of the senses. We go here, and we go here, and we go here, and we go here, and we go here. And we don't make a straight, resolute line to the lotus feet of Krishna, and our advancement is slower in that way because of that. Now this verse is very important, especially for the devotees of ISKCON, because Prabhupada once said that while he was reading this verse and the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he read it. And he read that one's intelligence is fixed when one adheres to the order of Guru. And he remembered at that time his spiritual master's order that he should preach in the West and preach in English. And that order, when he read Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to this verse, that order struck him in the heart. And again, his resolution to do this service of preaching in English and to the West increased. He again remembered the order of his spiritual master. And listen, this is a portion of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary translated. How to get fixed intelligence, vyasatmika buddhi. The best kind of intelligence I can have is intelligence used in the service of Krishna. That intelligence is defined as fixed when it is intent upon my spiritual master's instructions, such as chanting the name of Krishna, remembering his activities, and performing service to his lotus feet. His instructions are my sadhana and my life, both in the beginning stages of bhakti as well as in bhakti's perfectional stage. I desire only to follow his instructions. I accept nothing else as my life's work, even in dreams, whether I am happy or distressed, whether the material world remains or is destroyed, I do not care. There is no loss for me. I simply must carry out the orders of my spiritual master. Fixedness upon his orders is vyavyasatmika buddhi, determined intelligence in devotional service. And only by being fixed in his orders is such vyavyasatmika buddhi, determined intelligence, possible. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one, O beloved child of the Kurus. And the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So in the commentary, in Prabhupada's purport, he quotes, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada yasya prasada nagati pitopi dhyayam stuvam stasya yasya stasandyam vande guru sri charanaravindam. Now, after glorifying and explaining the strength and the potency of being fixed in a detached fashion and doing one's duty, now more about this process is going to be explained. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery works of the Vedas, which recommend various fruit of activities for elevation to heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So, as opposed to doing one's prescribed duties with detachment, there are other people called Veda-Veda-Rita that they say, forcefully speak, the word is pravadhanti, means they forcibly say that the purpose of following the Vedas is to gain these heavenly delights, and there is nothing more than this. Get sense gratification, do your work, get opulent life, enjoy yourself, and do this eternally. And in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, and these people lack detachment, and they also lack knowledge, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So if we are intent upon using the Vedas for sense gratification, or using the Shastra, the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, to attain heavenly pleasures in one's next life, or our interest is sense gratification in any form, then this resolute determination to make advancement on the path of Buddha Yoga will never take place. And it is a matter of being bewildered only. The Vedas, 45, deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. So here, Krishna is telling the real purpose of the Vedas. There's a whole Vedic system, which we'll explain when we discuss the third chapter. But there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of verses in the Vedas. And of these verses, 96% deal with how to attain heavenly pleasures, etc. Because most people are interested in gaining material enjoyment as a result of their work. But then, by the Vedic process, one may come to inquire about the other 4% of the Vedic slokas, and that are the Upanishadic or Jnanakanda section of the Vedas, which talk about the self. And this, to bring one to the platform of the self, is the purpose of the Vedas. So don't be disturbed. Become transcendental to what these Vedic slokas are saying. Triguna Vishaya Veda Nistriguna Bhavarjana. Don't be concerned with this. You should understand how these things, although they are in the Vedas, they have to be avoided. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So Veda, the purpose of the Veda means Vedanta, Vedanta. And this will be described. There are many things described in the second chapter, such as the Vedas, Vedanta, Triguna, Veda, Nistriguna, Bhavajana, that the three modes of material nature are dealt with in the Vedas. So the three modes of material nature, the Vedas, Vedanta, these will all be discussed later on in different chapters and explained in more detail. The whole system will be explained in more detail. So all the purposes served by the small well, which is the Vedas, can be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind the Vedas. So what is that Vedanta? Now Krishna will begin to describe that. This verse is another one of the verses that we're requiring you learn. Very important. Kamani eva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala hetu bhur ma te sangos phakamani. Krishna tells Arjuna there are so many platforms on which one can proceed in spiritual life. But your adhikari, or your qualification, is karma. You should not try to be inactive and perform jnana yoga. You should do the karma, the work, as I am describing it here. This is your adhikari, or your eligibility or qualification. Karma eva dikaraste. So often we see, if you go to Delhi sometimes, you'll see a big poster of Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot. Krishna's driving the chariot and Arjuna is with his bow in hand, and it says in bold Devanagari characters, karma eva dikaraste. That your adhikari is to fight. This is your duty, to do your work. And they always neglect to put in the next line, ma paleshu gadachana, but you should not be attached to the fruits of your work. So this is Buddha Yoga. That you work, because unless you are completely in the mode of goodness. If you try to be inactive, and this will be explained later, you will get into so much trouble. Therefore, you work, but in this special fashion, with this Nishkam Karma or Buddha Yoga, and that work will elevate you and free you from all sinful reactions. So you should work, but the second line, Mahapale Shukadarshana, means you should not be attached to the fruit of your work. Makama pala hito bor, nor should you think yourself the cause of the fruit. Don't think yourself the one, because of my great work, everything is happening. Because in that way you become entangled. And also, mate sangos to akamani, never become attached to inactivity or not doing your prescribed duty. So you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Perform your duty equipoise, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity, with that fixedness in mind, that vyasatmika buddhi, just doing one's prescribed duty, that fixedness in mind is called yoga. So therefore, when one is fixed like that, one's karma becomes karma yoga. So therefore, karma yoga is another name for this process. Buddhi yoga, karma yoga, bhakti yoga, they're all relatively almost the same. There are some distinctions which will come out. So the work will cease to bring reactions and you won't get any karma. It will become karma yoga. Next verse. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities. And these two verses, 49 and 50, are very important for the next chapter, especially. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service or buddhi yoga. Durena yavaram karma buddhi yogam Dhananjaya. Discard, throw away at a great distance all abominable activities by this process of buddhi yoga, devotional service. And in that consciousness, surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. And what is the fruit, the actual fruit of a person who wants to enjoy the results of his activity? It is just simply birth and death. So this is what that one is paid with if one is greedy for the fruits of his activity. A man engaged in buddhi yoga or devotional service rids himself of both good and bad actions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. So strive, work in this consciousness to become free from all reactions. A jnani will give up all his activities to become free from all reactions. But a devotee achieves the same result through this karma yoga of Krishna consciousness. There are no sinful reactions that touch a devotee. Because everything he does is fixed on the pleasure of the lotus feet of Krishna. So nothing at all is material. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back home, back to Godhead. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you will become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So the Vedas are the sources of one's prescribed duty, and you will not become confused by all the Vedic rituals. You will understand the purpose behind them. If you're a Brahmavadi, you will understand that that the purpose is to come to the platform where you can merge. If you're a devotee, you will understand that the purpose is to come to the lotus feet of Krishna and render eternal service in Goloka Vrindavan. And then the last verse in this section. When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. So this is a description of one in samadhi, or in beyond the modes of material nature. Okay, so we'll stop here. And tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll finish the chapter. So, I would like to know who feels they have a clear idea of how the chapter is progressing. Raise your hand if you feel you have a fairly clear idea about these main four sections. Quite a few. First section is what? Huh? The battlefield. I'm talking about in the second chapter. What is the first part? Huh? No, all right. No, the first part, I mean the first like 8 verses or so.
The reason why
it's fine. Yeah, Arjuna's, it's more or less a continuation of the first chapter. Yeah, Arjuna's doubting, and all his reasons, and then he surrenders. Then comes jnana. And then comes karma. Arjuna, fight, attain heaven, enjoy. And then karma and jnana mix, the section that we've done now. Buddhi yoga, using the intelligence. So it's work on the detached platform. Because if you're engaging in jnana, you're detached from all activities. So you don't get any reaction. So this Buddhi yoga is detached activities, but that are detached. And that is actually Krishna's recommendation in the Bhagavad Gita.
This is karma yoga state that Krishna recommends, like, first surrender to me, come do it, and then you follow me.
Yeah, that it's in there. Well, that, yes. Yes, it is in there. Meaning there are so many different steps that Krishna recommends in that 12th chapter, but we'll be going over those when we start the 3rd chapter. The 12th chapter, those steps are practically a summary of the what we call the yoga ladder, or the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th chapter. If you want to say the difference between, if you want to use technical terms, what is the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga? It is the difference between what is described in the 9th chapter of yat karosi yarashnasi yat juhosi dadatiyat yat tapasasi kanteya tat kurusvamarapanam. That whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever austerity you perform, whatever charity you do, it for me. So what Krishna says, so whatever you like to do, you do it for Krishna. There's an attachment to the work. That is karma yoga. Bhakti yoga is the verse before that. And that's patram pushpam palam toyam. That you do what I want. You give me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, a water. So depending upon where the surrender is, if you surrender before you work, it is bhakti. If you surrender after you work and offer Krishna the fruit, it is karma yoga. That's the technical difference. And karma yoga, or nishkam karma yoga, and karma yoga, will be explained in the 3rd chapter too. That there is, we're defining it as 2 different levels of karma yoga, sakam and nishkam, with desires and without desires. So all these things will be explained.
That time when there was this instance when Prabhupada was writing a stream and these came to gentlemen and said, no, we want karma yoga, and he said karma yoga is the truth. What kind of karma yoga was he, or why would he?
All kinds of karma yoga, because Krishna really wants bhakti yoga. Because in the 18th chapter, he says, Savadamam, I've explained to you so many different levels of this kind of yoga and that kind of yoga and this kind of yoga and that kind of yoga and this and that. And Savadamam, all these religious activities, Prityaja. Ma may come to me only, Sharanam. You surrender to me.
But why would he try to discourage him like that?
Discourage who? On the train.
Yes.
When the doctor is cutting and performing the operation, you don't call that discouragement. It's their foolishness for not surrendering. They were acting as if they were very learned in Bhagavad Gita, etc., etc. But everyone knows what is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Sarvadharmam pratyaja, that you give up everything and surrender to me. Ma may come. So why talk about karma yoga? This is the same thing. Karma eva adhikaras today. Krishna wants us to fight, to do our duty. That's the important thing. And I've seen it on the desk in Hong Kong, on so many desks of Indian businessmen. Work is worship. This is nonsense. Work is foolishness unless it is offered to Krishna. That's what did Prabhupada say? Karma yoga is for fools. Same thing. Work is for fools unless it is offered to Krishna. Because why is it for fools? Because if you work, you're just increasing your suffering. No matter what you do, you will increase your suffering. Because everything you do will bring bad results. It is impossible to do anything in this world. Even another 60 billion germs finished. Every breath, every step, another 200,000 germs. What to do? I just got some more. What are you going to do? You can't exist in this world without killing. And you have to get karma for all that. So if you think that work is worship, unless you give Krishna all the fruit of your work, you are a fool. And work is your foolishness and it is your doom. So therefore, Prabhupada was speaking like Krishna to them. And because they were fools, they could not surrender. They kept blowing cigarette smoke. Right? So they were
Buddha.
What could be said? But when the sadhu cuts, you can't say that he's discouraging. The people should listen and surrender. It's his business to cut. To take our foolish conceptions of what is reality that will lead us to hell and slice through them. That is the sadhu's business. And those who criticize the sadhu for cutting, very bad.
Also explain how Prabhupada uses the word Uni Yoga to say it's Krishna consciousness, although so far nothing was mentioned about this personal relationship between
Because Prabhupada is very kind and telling us what Krishna's intention actually is. He's telling the most confidential. Krishna is going to describe so many different stages, and then at the end he's going to say, get rid of them all and just surrender to me. So Prabhupada is showing us that if at every stage, confidentially, what Krishna is really telling us is bhakti, devotional service. So I will tend to explain the stages. But the real thing that Krishna wants is bhakti. And Prabhupada is giving the most confidential meaning right from the very beginning. And we'll see that after hearing this second chapter, Krishna is, Arjuna is confused. But you won't be confused because you've read Prabhupada's purports. He's telling exactly what Krishna means. He's revealing that.
So this word Pradikara in 247, why is that attached to a household is called Pradikara?
Because they have the right or the eligibility to enjoy some sense pleasure in that ashram. They have the eligibility. But if they misuse that eligibility and go outside the rules and regulations, then they become grihamidi and they will suffer. Okay, thank you.
Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada. Arjuna. And